today on Code Pen Radio.
Hey, everybody, time for another Code Pen Radio 121. The title is Refactoring. Refactoring in a very kind of specific sense, or in the context of a specific project at CodePen. Refactoring is kind of, as Dee was saying, Dee is here.
Hey, Chris. Dee, hey, everybody.
What up? It's kind of a abstraction in a sense. It's like rewriting your code to like be more or less abstract or something. And there's certainly a lot of that going on in this project. It's big, exciting times for CodePen. We've had a major, major project land and release, and not a big one that anybody of y'all will see. I mean, maybe you'll notice. I mean, there's certainly some UI elements to it, but it was like 90% a back-end job, and it's all related to our payment processing system. It was just a huge amount of code that needed to be redone to be smart for the future, and we'll get into why and how and the ins and outs of all that in a minute. But, you know, we might break this up over many shows because it's, you know, it's big, exciting times at CodePen. We're proud of this release, and it's been just really interesting to see it all go live. Somebody that was really highly involved in all this is Mr. Jake Albaugh. Jake is here too. Hey, Jake.
Hey, everybody.
It is something like probably, I don't have exact numbers on this, but like 18 months probably since we were like, was day one of like, maybe we should think about rewriting how payments works on CodePen. Only in the last week or so, or two weeks, has any of that code hit production. So why, number one, why would we do that? Why would we kill ourselves with you know, having so many people work for so long on something like this? I guess I'd love to have each of your takes on like high level backup bird's eye view. Why do we rewrite payment?
I think one of the first reasons was the old system was kind of the product of growth as a company, you know? And so it was kind of disjointed, because it was kind of, we build aspects of this or components of this, like as we grow, which is great because that's how like I have a job right now, is because CodePen did that and succeeded. And it, in that sense, it's necessary. But at a certain point when you're thinking about future growth, you kind of need to go back and realign these things that have kind of become segmented.
Like what sucked specifically though? I mean, it seems to me it was stuff like it felt a little spaghetti like in the logic around what a particular user was able to do and not do.
Yeah, permissions was a big thing. There was also it was if I wanted to be like, tell me like everything Chris Coyer has, you know, like his whole kind of subscription history or whatever. There was nothing really reflecting that in our database. We could kind of do some heavy work to kind of request that information from Stripe. I mean, it would be like a case by case basis. There would be no way though to just kind of like have a user go to their account settings and load that information.
I see. So we were also underserving our users in a way, and that they couldn't see. I mean, we had receipts and stuff, but it was pretty second class citizen.
Yeah, definitely. And it also relied heavily on certain assumptions that weren't always that won't always be true moving forward. And so it was a combination of that, I think, the permissions, and then us knowing information about our users. And being able to provide it. It was a combination of that, and we didn't really have a way to change prices without changing prices for everyone.
Like an overnight kind of thing? So right now, for example, or as of 2 weeks ago, it was like we had a plan, a pretty popular plan, $9 a month, CodePen Pro. We're always like, it's been that since the days that there was like almost no
pro features. It's been that price since we launched Pro back in like December 2012. We've never raised our prices in the entire history of CodePen.
We have done a lot since 2012, for sure, you know, and we're about to do a lot more for Pro users. So it's just mm-hmm. one of those things where, like, you know, we don't even do like a cost of living pro increase or whatever. We right. wanted to increase the prices. We did a decent job of warning it, or at least I did marketing wise. I'd be like, mm-hmm. hey, you should, you know, sign up for pro now, because there's this, the word that the world uses is grandfathering, right? Like, if mm-hmm. you're on the $9 plan, you still are.
Yeah.
Right. But we wanted to raise prices for new users. So an advanced fancy PayPal, or not PayPal, we'll get to that in a minute, payment system needs to be able to handle a grandfathering scenario.
And there was really no way to kind of show grandfathering in our database. And that's a problem, because if you get into the situation where you have people paying different amounts for the same things, and you can't derive that from your own data, you're kind of in trouble.
Going back to, like, exactly what Jake said, there were two big pieces. One was we have three major product lines or revenue sources, and the payment processing for each of those was written separately, independently. And so the refactoring and abstracting bit was combining that all into a single system, which Jake did an awesome job of designing and implementing and stuff. And then the second piece was just that CodePen has been growing up since 2012 as a business, especially in like the last year or so. After the investment, we've been looking at, like, what are annual sales looking like and what are monthly sales looking like, and our payment system was just not in a place where we could do quick experimentation that would affect revenue. And so that was the second goal, was just to get the payment system caught up to the new business approach and goals that we have.
And so those providers were, you know, we said the word Stripe earlier. We do use Stripe. If you just use a credit card and you sign up, which is a vast majority of people that sign up for CodePen, that gets processed on our end through Stripe. But we were also, like, a million years ago, we're like, we're kind of dumb not to take PayPal. We have to have some kind of system for PayPal. So the very first iteration of that was like, let's just, I don't know, make a PayPal button or something and ship them over there. And, or, like, you just PayPal us some money and we'll put you on a pro system.
Yeah, there was a Wufoo form early
on. Oh yeah, real early on, that would connected with PayPal. And then maybe there was an API callback that triggered them or something weird like that. And then I think there was another iteration that was a little more sophisticated, but not much. And it was only annual and you'd whatever. So there's, like, there's old PayPal and old PayPal and new old PayPal and whatever. Yeah. And so we're like, okay, we need to make, I'd love to make PayPal more of a first class citizen in checkout, meaning you just, like, you know, I don't know, everybody's been to a checkout form where they're like, do you want to pay with credit card? Or here's another radio button you can click with PayPal. So it's nobody's, like, we're getting there, because that's, but to get there was a refactor of how payment, and that's what Dee and Jacob are talking about here. They have an abstracted system so that even if we had to move off Stripe, God forbid, I'm sure we never will, but we could replace Stripe with a different thing. And our code remains abstracted away from what the payment provider is.
Right. You just have to make, like, a couple custom files, and then those files kind of link themselves to the API that we've built, and that system takes care of everything else.
It's a little bit like in Rails, isn't there? It doesn't matter what database you use. There's, like, an active record.
Yeah, exactly. Connection. Yeah, and it's not just, like, which payment provider you're using, but the system and the API that we built means we can add more product lines and revenue streams easily. Jake came up with this concept of an ownable, which sounds weird when you first hear it, and then you, like, slowly absorb it, and you're like, wow, that makes perfect sense. Sorry, Jake. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome, because now not only can you switch in and out payment providers, you can also add in or remove different lines of business and revenue, which is awesome, which is, like...
Yeah, like a team is an ownable. If you post a job, that's an ownable. So if we ever wanted to create a classroom for schools, that would be an ownable. And
that's
we wouldn't have to...
things that made this thing
take
forever.
We wouldn't have to do a ton of work. Yeah. we wouldn't have to do a ton of work making a new thing that can be paid for. That's the point.
Sort of the beauty of this is how extensible it is. We could add new payment processors, new payment types, new ownables, all this stuff. It's all this extensible system, which hopefully maybe will just go ahead and serve us forever. Echo
and
Ben.
Yeah. And promotional flexibility too. So instead of us having to give like 100% off all the time, like we have the, now that we're using Stripe's coupon system, instead of our own system,
we could finally offer an actual coupon.
Yeah, you could be like, yeah, like right now all our old promotions have been converted into 100% off promotions or coupons, but in the future, you know, maybe we could offer a 50% off, you know, or just like whatever it is. The point is that we just have that ability to kind of do that now where we didn't,
as well as new plans entirely. They don't even have to be off, but they could be, here's a new name of a plan, here's a new price for a plan, and then even most importantly to me, I think it's the most exciting, is like an abstracted permission system of what that new plan is able to do. Sprinkled throughout our code base was all this stuff like @user.paid ? And if they're paid, then they just have access to this checkbox or something, which other users wouldn't. And that's so silly, because it's like, it doesn't say anything about how many they get or what. And so this new abstracted permission system is so great. It's like @user.can.do. You know, that's not the actual API, but it's something like that. And it's specific to that feature.
Yeah.
It's so cool. And we've already put it to the test, because we already have a new middle tier plan, which is a little weird if you're looking at our payment plans right now, because it'll make a lot more sense when our next big project drops, which I know are still being cagey about. But if you're pro, there's a good chance you already have it, because we've been rolling it out slowly to pro users. That's another whole podcast series. Stay tuned for it. But here's the thing, and Dee has a bunch of really interesting notes here regarded to this refactoring and this new whole payment thing that we're doing. One of them is, when you set about doing something like this and you're about to merge like a year or more or whatever worth
of over 1,000 commits, that's the over 1,000
major database changes too, because that's a big part of this, right? Was like, what does the perfect database look like for this? That was a big part of this, right? So that, and like new Stripe plans, like this thing touches so much. For high level priority number one, I wonder what Dee wrote here is, don't mess things up for users, which I absolutely agree with. Don't mess anything up for users. But almost sub one, high level priority zero, is make sure that we don't like make as much money as we did last month, right? Like, sure that those charges go through again the next month, so we don't, you know, have to.
There was more profanity in like V1 of that note, and so I guess we're gonna keep it PG, but yeah. Not only is it that we want to make sure that we're making next month what we made the previous month as a subscription business, but like priority, like top red alert is, don't charge users when they shouldn't be. Like, my greatest fear when we were doing this migration was somehow, lots of profanity, we were going to just randomly charge our users while we were doing the migration. And to me, if we didn't do that, it was successful.
that would be how incredibly embarrassing and just trust eroding would that be? I mean, we would deserve any vile anything thrown at us if we did that. Fortunately, it didn't happen. What would you give us both? I should make you both say it at the same time. I'll count down 3, 2, 1, and you have to announce a letter grade that we got for the rollout of payments. 3, 2, 1.
B+.
C+.
I love it. We'll go with
these. Only because, like, you know, the release was the longest release in CodePen's history. It was like literally almost 24 hours. But, you know, there were like other things that were happening that had nothing to do with the migration, like random DB junk. But when we got to the migration, it like worked and there were like almost no problems. And because that was my highest priority, that's why I give us the B+, even though Jake's right. It was not perfect, certainly, but that was just,
I'm not upset about it.
I hope not. You did great.
For me, the big, The biggest thing was the fact, like, was the paranoia, because the what we were just talking about accidentally charging people somehow by changing their plans, or you know, something to that effect. The fact that that didn't happen for me meant it was a success, because that's also the hardest thing to test.
Yeah.
Because you're actually dealing with Stripe's API, and so you can't just like do a test of all your edge cases. You know, you can test the things that you can predict, but you can't predict everything. So I was worried there. But we put all the guards in place and it did go swimmingly. So that was a success. I wish that we didn't mess up some of the things that we've been dealing with this past week post release.
Yeah. I mean, you can imagine there's probably a user or two who's like, it didn't feel so smooth to me.
Right. Exactly.
And that goes to like another question that, Jake had, is like balancing releasing the perfect new payment system versus getting something deployed. Like Jake, you have,
versus not releasing.
Right, yeah. And Jake, you have the most experience because you've been working on our payments refactor for the longest time. So like what have you kind of like learned based on that idea?
Yeah, I mean, it's the sort of thing that there's a lot of fine lines you have to draw when it comes to, you know, what is striving for success and what is expecting perfection. And, you know, a lot of times expecting perfection can be accounting for something that could potentially never even happen. And you spend a day and a half working on code to support it, you know? And so it's all about identifying those things and being like, okay, I should not be worried about this. We can handle this in support. You know, Marie is like the nicest person on earth, and like reaching out. Sometimes I want to write into CodePen support to talk to Marie, but she handles those things so well. Where it's like, if one person, you know, accidentally doesn't have pro status after this, but they totally should, you know, we can re-enable that. And like, we have the best relationship with our users are the best. And so like, instead of me trying to find all of those cases and account for them in the release, in the migration, you know, if you spend too much time on those things, you'll just never even release the thing. And you'll also never sleep.
That's
in the meantime.
Which we didn't do a lot of the couple of weeks of before the release. But like, that's a great point. How do you prioritize which bugs are okay? Because like, the users aren't going to be super upset, hopefully. It can be easily fixed within like an hour or two, hopefully.
What's a bug that we shipped on purpose?
I don't know if I want to admit to any of that, Chris.
Well, I mean, one of them is still out there, but should be fixed soon. It's nothing that hurts people. It actually just is something that we just haven't accounted for.
These are mostly, they're not like, oh, well, we'll, you know, 3% of our users won't have pro features. That's cool. Let's ship it anyway. There was no bugs like that. Right. These are little things like internally we can't we used to have a way to like put someone on a promo plan if there was like extenuating circumstances or something. And that's just not out. We decided it was more important to get this thing out the door, which has to do with morale.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
Plus we were making so much progress on like this upcoming feature that we're about to release. Is already in master and already behind, you know, people are able to use it on CodePen, and it needs to actually have a lot of changes done to it to actually use the new payment system. So there's a part where it's like, you know, we're moving forward on two fronts and we need at some point to actually bring them together. So it was kind of imperative that we at least got something out the door for payment.
Oh, it feels good to be on one master branch.
Exactly.
And not only just the master branch, but this other feature is literally blocked by the payments release. Like, they cannot release the feature until payments goes out. So, like, at that point, your priorities become really, really clear. Like, yes, we want to have this awesome promotional admin UI, but that means that we're not going to get this other feature out in like another week or two, and that's just not acceptable, you know?
Right.
So
So like this week I worked on the promotion system, creating new promotions. Everyone that was on a promotion was accounted for, But this week I've been working on
which allowing includes like free trials, which is something we've had forever. Yep. It yep. includes like extended free trials, like the kind that we would ship to meetups and stuff sometimes. Yep. And like super friends from like the super alpha days who we gave like lifetime subscriptions to or whatever. Mm-hmm. That type of thing. That all worked when we shipped it. We just can't do anything new until now. And now we'll be able to again along right. and have it be more powerful.
And the other thing was we disabled PayPal signup, which is a whole conversation. Because we're going to be integrating Braintree.
Maybe that's what we'll have be the second podcast yeah. is like now that yeah. we've talked about all this refactoring, what are the things that we're able to do? And we can talk about adding, because that's what we want to do. We want to add Braintree and Stripe. So mm-hmm. I don't know. It's kind of funny because like, why would you do that? Because Braintree can do what Stripe can do kind of, but it's like, we've been with Stripe forever. All our data is on Stripe. We love Stripe. Let's stay there. But we really want to offer PayPal.
Also, you never want to move like existing subscriptions to another payment provider. That's like
right. We'd
crazy.
Have to, we'd have to continue supporting it
yeah,
forever.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that would be bad. But we want to offer PayPal and, you know, PayPal APIs, we've even talked about on the show before, like the ones right on PayPal are like super extra terrible. So yeah. we don't want to deal with PayPal directly. Fortunately, PayPal owns Braintree and Braintree is like APIs for itself.
Right.
It's like good APIs for PayPal.
Unfortunately, there isn't a button that'll take all your PayPal and switch it over to Braintree.
No,
so we
but
still have
okay.
to keep supporting the old PayPal. But yeah, it's going to be loads easier once we get Braintree going.
So let's wait and talk about that yeah. later.
Yep, totally.
Which is kind of cool. And talk about this other stuff now. So our high-level priorities, don't mess anything up. Don't double-charge users. Don't ship. Don't you know take away their features, stuff like that. That was a high priority. Another priority was data integrity, meaning we need to like make sure we don't like, I don't know, lose our history. We need to know about our business, right? So let's make sure that our data is okay. Is that what you meant by that?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Making sure you're porting over okay. all the same data and also that you're not losing any subscriber during the migration, which could happen.
That was a big process you referred to as reconciliation, right? There was a ton
yeah,
of that.
Yeah,
work,
that was
right?
probably the most like admin-y type stuff that we did. We like literally built an admin UI around comparing the data set and making sure that it was automated. And that was super useful because it functioned as an integration test as well as like a data integrity test. So, yeah.
And then you have notes for like, which we already talked about, the idea of like this, a perfect system versus something that we can actually get out the door. Cause this was a long, long project. We needed to get out the door. We did that. And now we can, continue iterating on it and then improving upon it. You know, making sure that it was at least as good as the old system and then mm-hmm. better. So, oh, it's good. We did increase prices. I'm sorry, anybody who's not pro and wants to go pro now, you're going to pay a little bit more than you did before. Although it was kind of an interesting how it lined up. It's only like a little bit more, right? It's not like a ton more, but right. like what we always said is $9 a month. It's still $9 a month if you go annual. That was kind of one of the most feel good parts about it. Like that number kind of stays the same if you choose for an annual plan. Yep, and you're grandfathered in, so never leave, please. Because you'll get the best possible prices if you never leave. That's pretty good. And then what else here? The title of the show again is refactoring. So I imagine there's some people that are listening. How much was it? It was part of the length of how long this took to work on because it touched so many files. Or was that not?
Yeah, I mean, well, it was a combination. There were two primary aspects of this thing, which was the first of which was migrations, migrating all the existing data over to the new system, and not losing anything. And then the second major part was the new system. And how we, you know, we talked about permissions, whether or not you're allowed to use things. We talked about like being able to show like how many subscriptions somebody has, like all the front end stuff associated with that. All the webhook stuff had to be rewritten. And so those were the two sides. And I think both of those, you know, could have easily, like we could have spent you know, another couple months on both sides of that, if we weren't careful. And yeah, I mean, it was just so overwhelming how many files there were. And a lot of it gets deleted. All the migration code is going to get deleted. And that probably represents half of the work that was done on this.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And it's also lost in terrifying time. To like delete files from the legacy payment system. It was at the end of it, it was three of us working on it. Alex kind of led the project, Jake, and then me. And like, I think Jake and I never deleted a file and let Alex do all that. And every time I did delete a file, I like wrote up a whole issue. I'm like, this is the file I deleted. Alex, is this okay?
Right. It's so funny. Alex is kind of like, I'm just deleting this because this does not look like it's being used and this is garbage. Like, is so necessary in order to actually clean up your code base. And that's just something that's so hard for me to do because I'm terrified that I'm going to delete one file, you know, that
I
shouldn't have.
And I think it's because, like, Alex was part of writing the original file. So he's like, this is junk. What, my old code is total junk. Just delete it all. We can't use this. So, yeah.
So why isn't there like a gem for this or something? Is this so unique snowflake of code for CodePen that it... You know, like there's so many web apps that like have different plans and different pricing and stuff. Like, why isn't it?
Like, you're talking about the new pricing structure and everything?
Well, just like, why do we have to write this stuff from scratch? Isn't there like a plug and play kind of thing that just works for all web apps? Like, I don't know. Or here's a different way to phrase that. Let's say you have a web app you want to write, Jake, and all it is it has one plan. It's $5 a month. And if you're a member of this, you can go to this special page that's protected that you can only see if you're a paying member. And press a button and it makes a trombone sound or whatever. There's one plan and it is one permission. Would you use in a system that's as complex as ours because you know that it will serve you in the future or no?
Well, part of the pretense there was that this is all you have and ever will have. Like, do you get two trombones if you play $10?
Maybe. That's the thing. You're planning for an abstract.
Okay, so if you might be... Yeah, I mean, I feel like you need a certain level of complexity to... engage in something like this for growth, because I think the amount of overhead to write a system that accomplished that served that first purpose that you're talking about, like that super basic, the amount of code you need to write to make that happen is so minimal that refactoring is fairly easy. I feel like if you started wanting to accept alternate payment providers and you wanted to create more plans, maybe that would be the point at which you'd then look into, like at that first change, you'd look into like, okay, how do I?
So, and there are subscription services out there like Chargeify and Chargebee that basically their service is recurring billing. They set it up for you. It's like the gem concept that you were talking about, Chris. But I think what happens, especially as companies start to grow, you want to have a lot of control over that entire process. So, like for example, a bunch of the front end work that we did was based around which plans do we want to highlight? Which are our most popular plans? Which ones do we think would be most useful for users? There's like an entire industry behind that. There's A/B testing tools like Optimizely and, you know, Google Analytics and, you know, all of that. And so I think we just wanted to have that control as we're kind of growing up.
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right. The control thing sounds like a big deal because it's like, now we're intimately familiar with it. Now if we need to send some analytic data at a certain point in the process or complete an A/B test at a certain point in the process, or as we're thinking of this other feature of that we're working towards, which is kind of like a modal version of upgrading, we know we can do it because it's 100% our code. We'll just, if there's something we want done, we're going to do it.
Yeah, I mean, the cool thing is I do think that a lot of our system is abstract enough where it doesn't actually rely on the idea of CodePen, which is cool. Like, I mean, it would obviously need to be cleaned up before being turned into like a public thing, but, that was the first time I'd really thought about like whether or not this would apply outside of CodePen, and it's kind of cool that it totally actually does. Would.
I think there'd be like APIs and stuff. Like I used for even in WordPress land, I've used like, plugins that deal with membership kind of thing. And the way that it's built is just like, oh, you want, you know, just check these check boxes for what payment providers you want to take. Mm-hmm. Oh, put your API credentials in. Okay, that's working now. You know, what kind of plans do you want? Oh, they're named this, this, and this. Okay. And it just seemed like, oh, that's a perfectly abstracted system. And they're like, oh, do you need a callback for when somebody signs up? Well, here, you know, it's like an abstracted membership system, which felt pretty cool, you know.
Totally.
There's got to be something like that for Rails. But you know, but it is like there probably is limitations in using that. I'm sure if you worked with that on a heavy duty basis, you'd start to get annoyed that it didn't do this or this or this. Yeah. Or this.
And I think it's also a matter of trust as well, right? Like Stripe's built so much trust because they have such a great API and they're never down and they work. You can like trust their logic, even in the stuff you do in your billing system. But if someone wrote the entire thing, then you have to trust every bit of your system to someone else. And because like billing and finance are just like inherently complex and tedious tasks, it's really difficult to build that framework and maintain it. And then I think it's really hard to like always get it right and build up that trust. I think you have to take it a very small chunk at a time, the way that Stripe has. They've built an API for developers that's very, like you can count on it. They're reliable. They've done a great job. Exactly. Yeah. It's super reliable no matter what. I just think that that's so hard to do, I would say.
So another aspect to this is, wow, this was such a long project. Is it just inherently that long of a project or what happened along the way? And that's probably just, you know, we're about out of time anyway. I think that might make sense for a future one too. Don't hold your breath, people. But, you know, we've talked about PM, you know, project management for a while too, and the way that we've been handling project management for different projects definitely leaked its way into this project as well. So if you have questions about what I'm talking about, go back a few episodes. We talked about project management, but it might be interesting to talk about that as well. And then certainly in the future, when we take advantage of this payment system and do a lot more with it all of a sudden, we'll do another episode about that. Okay. Sounds good. Perfect. Yeah. Talk to you later, everybody.
Bye.
See you, everybody.
Seven, six, zero, three, one, eight.